B, you remember this song? Damn, dude. You can be cut if you handle a football like that. Can't get your headphones on.
Yeah, but see, I don't get cut off of this. That song, yeah, I've heard that before.
No Rain by Blind Melon.
Yeah, couldn't tell you the name of it.
It's a good tune, though.
Heard it when I was going down the elevator one time.
That's kind of weird.
Elevator music.
dude, I want to get to this Lewis Riddick thing, but I did want to ask you, did you see the catch Jacob Young made in center field for the Nats?
No.
Jeff, see if you can drop that in the text thread, the Jacob Young catch. It is, I mean, legitimately one of the best catches I've ever seen.
He may get him an ESPY.
Maybe. I think Jacob Young won a gold glove. I love when dudes can go like deep center field catches like that. You remember my man Otis Nixon? I think he played for the Braves way back. He had one of just the all-time awesome catches. Who was it for the Mets that had one in an NLCS game? Andy Chavez, I want to say. Like, really memorable catches like that. I love that stuff. Jeff, drop that in for B to watch, and we'll get a live reaction. Or maybe I might be able to find it faster than Jeff. I just watched the Otis Nixon catch from, I think that was in, like, the NLCS against the Pirates. Jacob Young, it's just bananas, B. You're going to enjoy it. I'll work on finding it. Okay, it's in the chat, B. Open that joint up. This is Jacob Young for the Nats yesterday in that day game. Tell us when you got it.
All right. I got to go to it now. I was answering a Richmond caller.
What? Candy Crush?
No, I was answering an email. Oh, man. I'm just looking at it. It's still right now.
Yeah, like where he is? Yeah. Like his arm is the equivalent of like
that was hit. That
his
was
head
hit.
Over the rim.
That was sweet.
Dude, I mean.
That was sweet. And it got that little step.
Yeah.
And look. The guy.
I love how his shirt got untucked.
Like, oh! Yeah.
I love how his shirt got untucked from jumping up on the wall like that. Also, this Reds hitter mashed that ball, dude.
Oh, he did.
I mean, that is deep center, almost to the
bullpen.
That's
some great awareness to be able to be running and put that foot and go up at the same time.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
Nats also won a game, which is also cool. There are still 20 games under .500.
They won a few of them in that series, didn't they? I think they won the other night. Then they lost. I think
they've won.
Yes, they lost one.
They lost.
They won like two of them.
They took two out of three. They won the series. Yeah. They day off today, and I think they start in Minnesota tomorrow. All right, I did want to play this because I think of a lot of the national kind of analyst pundits.
Uh-huh.
I think Lewis Riddick, because he once worked here, I feel like Riddick tends to be pretty pro burgundy and gold. A lot of guys aren't. I think he is, though. And so this stood out to me the other day. I'll be honest, I don't know what show this was from, but it was from one of the ESPN shows. And Lewis Riddick talking about.
Yeah, they cut off Stephen A. at the end. That was good.
Yeah. And Stephen A.'s too busy planning his stadium in Laurel. But this is Lewis Riddick, a guy I respect. I think he has good football opinions on the Terry McLaurin situation.
I know we've differed on this, you know, in talking about this earlier today, but I'll tell you this. I'm a 10 out of 10 concerned because every day matters, regardless of the fact that I know it's late July. Terry is a great pro. He's played a lot of football. They don't play football until September. I know that's always the very, you know, the very common response to this kind of thing. And then, you know, some are going to say, and I know I'm already jumping ahead of Kimberly, so I'm going to get out ahead of some of her arguments right now. And look, Terry wants to be there. He's a guy who's going to be on the wrong side of 30, so to speak. There's a lot of reasons as to why maybe Washington is taking their time. But look, if you want to guard against making sure that the guy who basically has resurrected your franchise and made this city and this region, the DMV, as excited as it has been in the past 30 years, and that being Jaden Daniels, if you want to make sure that you safeguard that trajectory that he is on and keep it going the way it's going, then you need to make sure that every day that he can spend with Terry McLaurin, he spends with Terry McLaurin in a football setting in your building. And you shouldn't be haggling over, well, you know what? How much longer will Terry play at this level? How much nickel and dime them to the point where the guy is not in camp and he's not practicing? This is another one of those things that should be done. And look, they have done everything right. Every move they've made has been a absolute like hit out of the park. And I believe this team will be right there in contention. And I'm not one of those teams, rather one of those people who believes that there's an automatic sophomore slump because people get film on you and people understand what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in that crap. I don't, and I damn sure don't believe it with Jaden Daniels. But if you keep messing around with the guy who is his dude and you don't allow them to continue to grow, you're playing with fire. Just get him signed.
10 out of 10 for Lewis Riddick. I agreed with everything he said there about the sophomore slump. I don't see it coming.
I agree with a lot of stuff as well, but the thing is, they've done everything right. Who's to assume they're not going to do this one right? I think his concern is more about Jaden's growth being stunted. Okay? And listening to Dan Quinn this morning talk about Jaden, watch Jaden out there. Jaden is going through his process just like he's always done. And I think he would rather have a Terry McLaurin in it, but he's not going to change his process. You know what I mean? So I think Lewis' concern is more about you don't want to stunt the growth of Jaden in no way possible. But I don't believe that they have to just do whatever. Like we stated that yesterday when people say, just give him whatever he wants. That doesn't work for the long haul for everybody. You may have to give him more than you want to give him. But not just whatever he wants. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I understand the aspect of it, and I'm with you. I probably don't listen to most of the people on ESPN because I know that they have a tendency to tell people to take sides just because. I listen to Lewis more than any one of them because I believe, like you state, he has a very, very good football mind. He has very, very good football opinions and things like that. But that argument was more about Jaden than it was getting that deal done. And I don't know if that will stun him that much if Terry is not there for a week or two or three.
I think Jaden, and you know, one of the like the most fun people I love talking Skins or Commanders football with is Unyang, because she's just such a big fan, and she reacts with the highs and lows. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And she is a true fan. Totally. I've seen her.
She gets animated. She keeps asking me about Terry. And I'm like, listen, yes, it's a concern, but at the same time, this is football. And I think I'm not worried about Jaden's growth getting stunted. I'm really not. I can't imagine you are.
No, I'm not. And I think the ultimate thing about this is, you know, you have to have a concern of what things are going, because I think everything has just been working so smoothly. But it's a little saying that nothing good comes easy, and I totally believe in that. If you want something to be great, which is having Terry come back on his team, and he's going to be a while, you're going to have to stumble a little bit. You're going to have to go through some tough times. And I believe that Josh Harris and this crew wants that to happen. I believe Adam Peters wants it to happen. But I can't just go with fans and people that say, give him whatever he wants. Because if you give him whatever he wants, you may mess up the opportunity of signing somebody else later. And then you're going to say, give that person what he wants. If we give everybody what they want, then you know what? You know, you're not going to end up with anybody. So you have to go through the process to make sure this thing works. Lewis' concern about Jaden, I think, is a good one. But I think, just like he said, he doesn't believe in sophomore slumps, especially when you're talking about Jaden Daniels. So if you don't believe in sophomore slumps, especially when you're talking about Jaden Daniels, then you shouldn't believe that he's going to be stunted like a typical quarterback, because this kid is different. You know, I've been around this league for over 30 years, and I know most people come into the league because of what the league can give them, what they can get from it, the notoriety. Jaden is in this league to win and be the best he can be. Does he indulge in some of the same thing? Yes. But that's not his main goal. You know, I don't see him running around here with that NFL medallion like most guys do as soon as they get drafted and then they stop working. He has worked more and harder this year than he did last year. As he told you last year when, once again, fans were tripping because Dan Quinn hadn't named a starter at quarterback, the young man that we all were pulling for said, if I become the starter, it's not going to stop me from working. I'm going to keep doing what I'm supposed to do. So, in essence, we can't worry about some of those things that we don't have any control over. We have to educate ourselves a little bit more on what's going on with this team. Like, you know, where what's the pro moves? What happens in pro football? This is the business side. So, as fans, I think we need to educate ourselves in that aspect, too, so we can just not be so concerned, so worried about some things. So, as you go forward, and I've said it, I said it to JP, I said it to anybody I do radio TV with, we're not here just to entertain fans. We're here to also educate. So, let's educate them on the business side so when these things come up, they don't have to be getting their blood pressure going up so high and losing their minds all the time. All right, we're going to take us a quick break here. When we get back, we'll continue on. Coming to you live from training camp. And it's all brought to you by Paul Henry's Window Installation. But, hey, it's B. Mitch here. If you want comfort and convenience wherever life takes you, you need to turn to Rood. With Wi-Fi compatibility, you have full control of your heating and cooling system right from your phone. Forgot to turn down the heat before vacation? You can adjust it in seconds. Plus, you'll get alerts if something's not right. These guys are the best, and they've installed new systems in my house, and I felt the difference instantly. And here's the best part. Rood systems are whisper quiet. No more noisy interruptions, just peace of mind. Rood's variable speed compressor ensures precise temperature and humidity control, operating efficiently even in extreme conditions. Its comfort and performance perfectly balanced. Also, don't forget about the savings. You can qualify for federal tax credits up to $2,000 on heat pumps throughout 2032. Visit Rood.com/federal incentives to learn more. Rood, R-U-U-D, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in a DMV. And remember, if it ain't Rood, it ain't right.
Joining us right now is our friend Logan Paulson. Logan does tremendous work with Craig Hoffman on the Take Command podcast. Logan does great work with the team on a number of podcasts and TV shows. What Logan does really, really well is football analysis. And because of that, I'm really, really excited to talk to Logan about football. Logan, how are you, dude?
Good, man. I'm excited to talk football with you, man. That was a great introduction. Thank you.
You know what? You know what we're not going to talk about? Stadiums, the president.
We can talk about stadiums that we're going to. We can talk about stadiums that we're going to play in this year.
SoFi. Like, let's just talk ball. The team reports tomorrow. I got a list of kind of position stuff I want to talk about. Let's start if you're good with it. What do you see Von Miller's role? Like, snap percentage? How often do you see him out there? How big of a boost do you think Von Miller is to this team?
Yeah, so I think he's going to kind of be what Dante Fowler was for this team last year, what he was supposed to be. And he's supposed to be kind of your pass rush specialist, the guy that can win a one-on-one when you got to have it. So, you know, I think you see him out there on third down, second and long, you know, two-minute situations, end-of-game scenarios when the team's trying to drive the length of the field and score. So I think ultimately that comes out to probably anywhere between 12 and 20-ish snaps, you know, if the offense is playing well and the opposing team is trailing, like that's probably what his pitch count is going to look like. And, you know, Von Miller to me was the scariest player in the NFL when I was playing, and I'd lose sleep over playing against him. He was strong. He was fast. He's obviously not that same caliber of player anymore, but like when you watch the film of him, you see a guy that still really understands pass rush at the highest level. He understands leverages. He understands when the tackle's off balance. He understands when the slide's to him, when the slide's away. He understands when to take his shot. And I'll tell you, that's something that's extremely hard to coach. So, like, having a guy like that in the fold, in the building, a guy that now you can get multiple players on the defensive line that can win one-on-ones. You got Dorrance Armstrong, you got Von Miller, you got Jerzon, Duran, Kinlaw on the interior, then you got Frankie Luvu. I think all those guys, given a one-on-one, can win a one-on-one. And that's something that, you know, I don't think you had quite to the same level before Von signed with the team.
Logan, you've been around football a long time, and when you get a guy like that with that level of experience, how much is that going to be a plus for other guys, not just himself?
Yeah, you know, I've been very fortunate to have guys that I've played with and guys that I currently coach that have played with Vaughn. And one of the things they say about him is that he's a great mentor. Like, he really, because again, like, he understands some of that stuff that intuitively, you know, is kind of there for him. Like, it's not intuitive for everybody. So his ability to say, hey, like, when the tackle's in this stance, think about this. Or when the tackle's overset his line, I'm going to hit with this counter. And I've just, he's just a guy that has a great feel. And so sometimes when you can watch a guy like that work every day as a young pass rusher, you're going to learn a lot from him, right? And I think also, like, he's going to have a gold jacket on it at some point in his life. And I think having guys like that in the building, see how they work, see their process, see how they watch film, that's all extremely valuable. So I think a lot of guys are going to benefit from him being around. And, you know, like, just having him on the field at the same time as Daron Payne and Jerzon and some of those other guys I just mentioned, like, you can't one-on-one, you can't give those guys the double team anymore, because mm-hmm. you have to worry about what Vaughn can bring. And again, he's not what he once was, but the intuition, the execution in pass rushing situations is still extremely high and is definitely going to benefit everybody from a play standpoint, but also, like you're talking about, being from a kind of knowledge transfer mm-hmm. standpoint.
Okay. Going, sticking with the D-line one more, it seems very obvious to me, just seeing these dudes that they brought in, they made a concerted effort to get a lot bigger. Do you think that will work? Run defense was a real problem last year. Do you think they're trying to fix it with bulk?
Yeah, so I think you're trying to fix it with bulk, but I think you're also trying to fix it with people who know how to stop the run and know how important it is to kind of play in the context of the defense. Like, I think when you look at, you know, Dietrich Wise, like, a guy that's been incredibly consistent up in New England, Eddie Goldman, I think, you know, is one of the more kind of, like, in terms of specialty pitchers, like we just talked about with Von Miller, like, he's a guy that can play the run at a high level. You know, yeah. Like, he's going to be where he's supposed to be. He knows how to set a double team. Like, he is a big guy, but his skill set is also one that fits that. So, yeah, I think you get guys that understand their role, their context of the defense. Cleveland Farrell has always kind of been that type of player ever since his time in Las Vegas. And I think you're going to get a better version of Bobby Wagner when you get more consistent play from the offensive line. So, obviously, Daron, I think, can do a lot of stuff playing that three technique in terms of being where he's supposed to be. Like, I remember watching the Tampa Bay game, the playoff game last year, and watching Daron, like, really set hard edges on guards, get to extension, play his gap, let Bobby get to where he's got to go. And I think just getting more consistency from that group is going to be great. And again, like, talk about raising the floor of a defense. Like, you just need to get slightly better against the run. Like, you just need to go from where were they, 28th last year to 16th.
Yep.
And think about what that's going to do in terms of getting you more third and long situations, more pure pass opportunities, more opportunities for you know, the defense to kind of bring those specialty blitz packages. So I think it's going to be a huge factor. Yes, did they bring in bigger players? Sure. But did they also bring in guys that really have a skill and a knack for stopping the run and being where they're supposed to be in a run game? I think both those things are true.
Talking with our friend Logan Paulson here on the Rude Guest Hotline. You can hear Logan with Hoffman on Take Command podcast, or check out Commander's YouTube page. Logan is all over that, doing all sorts of film breakdowns, lots of great content. You can follow Logan on Instagram. No Twitter for Logan, just Instagram. Is it L Paulson _82? What is it?
I think it's
you gotta know it, Logan. You can't think.
Gosh, you guys just bringing all these hard questions on me. I came here to talk ball, not about my social media footprint. You know,
well,
what I'm saying?
Like, that's how you promote yourself and have other people know what you do.
I got you. It's Logan. It's Logan _Paulson82, guys. All right, there we go. I got it. I found it.
All right. Let's go back a level. Jeremy Chinn was really good for this team last season. He played 100% of snaps just about all the times he was healthy. Or it wasn't a blowout or something. 100% of defensive snaps. They lost Chinn in free agency. They bring in Will Harris, a player they're excited about. Does Will Harris step into Chinn's role? Or is this a collection of players that kind of get to the Chinn snap count from last season?
Yeah, so I think, you know, when I look at Will Harris, I think there's a lot of similarities in terms of how Jeremy Chinn played last year. I think you see a guy who's a really good blitzer, really good blitzer. I'll say that. I think he's really solid against the run. I think he's physical. I think he understands run fits. I think the thing that he adds a little bit of value in is that he's slightly better in coverage. And I think when you look at some of Jeremy's limitations last year, it was like, how does he match up in man-to-man one-on-one coverage situations? And I think Will Harris, at least in the stuff that I've seen of him in New Orleans, does a great job of kind of bringing a higher coverage IQ. So I think this gives you a little bit more flexibility in terms of the coverage shows you can play in the back end, right? So I think, you know, he can still do some of the stuff you saw from Jeremy last year, you know, in terms of like fitting the run, being aggressive, taking on blockers and blitzing. But I also think you get a slight plus in terms of coverage. So do I think Jeremy did a great job last year? Absolutely. But do I think Will Harris will do a great job this year and add an element of flexibility that he didn't have? Yes. And so I'm very optimistic that he'll come in, he'll do what he needs to do on first and second down, but also kind of lets you get into some more diverse coverage shells and coverage looks with him and Quan Martin back there and their coverage ability. So that's something that I'm really excited about. And again, it's watching them in spring, that's kind of the vibe I got. And I know it's only spring, and I can't wait to watch them in training camp next week to see if that utilization continues.
Hey, you mentioned Quan, a guy who played last year, had a shoulder injury. Nobody knew that. Well, you may have known. I didn't know it. Played very well, I thought. How good can he be this year?
Dude, I think he can be special, man. I think when you just watch him and what he does well, like, he just plays the game, like, kind of the way you're supposed to play it, B. And I know you've watched him a ton. Or you're a fan of his. Like, he's physical. He gets downhill. He tackles well. And then he has this great athleticism and range in the back end to cover and make plays on the football. So I think when you're drawing up kind of qualities you want in a safety, like, he's got, I think people also forget, yeah, he had the injury last year, but last season was his first full-time season learning one position. You know, Ron was trying to get him to play inside corner, outside corner, safety, big nickel, all this stuff, which is very different kind of across the board. So now we've given him an opportunity to focus. And I think you see what that looks like, you know, what that looks like for him in terms of saying, like, I have one job. And again, there's plays of him last year where I'm like, man, that's a fantastic football player that's still so raw at the position that's only going to get better. So I look at the safety duo as being like kind of one of the more underrated parts of the team. I think if Quan Martin takes a step, if Will Harris plays the way he did in New Orleans, like, this could be a very interesting, you know, it doesn't have a necessarily a big name in it, but they've got two really good football players. And like, that's the highest compliment I can give a guy that straps it up on Sundays, is like, you're good at the thing, you're good at football. And the, both those guys are instinctive, smart and tough. And I'm excited for that duo to kind of be the Batman and Robin of this defense.
I'm with you there. You think Amos pushes Jones for that starting spot right away?
I do think so, man. And I think a little bit of that comes from what he did during OTAs and minicamp. Like, there were times where, you know, like, you see some of his experience, you see some of his dexterity and kind of understanding, probably because he played in multiple defenses in college, you know, like, played in at Ole Miss, played at Alabama. And there's another team that he played for. I don't remember exactly. Where was it?
You better not forget that school, man. You might forget Ole Miss, forget anything in Mississippi, like Fred.
That's right. So, you know, played a lot of different defenses, and they're all well-coached groups. And so I think you see him, and you see his confidence, and you see a maturity there. You see a length, you see good athletes. So I think, yeah, like, he's a guy you draft in the second round who I was very high on coming out of Ole Miss. I really liked what he did, and I think he's great value. So, like, to me, like, I'm cautiously optimistic that he's going to be the starter for week one, you know, and that's not a knock on Jonathan Jones or anything like that. I think Jonathan Jones is also a good football player, but Trey Amos, I think there's just such a high upside there. And if he can kind of fill out that outside role, Jonathan Jones is your first kind of rotational guy in. Mikey Sanderson moves to nickel. Marshawn Lattimore plays the way that he played the first 5 weeks of the season when he was in New Orleans. Like, I think you're in for a pretty solid secondary, especially if those safeties play the way I think they're capable of playing.
Dude, I'm with you. I really like Amos. I consider Lattimore almost like a fulcrum to this defense. Like, if he can perform at the level they traded for him, like, why they wanted him, then all of a sudden you've got a shutdown corner, Mikey, who's a baller, Quan, who's a baller, and if Amos could step in, like, that secondary could be really good. And you get a little pass rush. Like, I could see the vision why they wanted things the way they did. I also think, one, I'll never understand why fans get so worked up about money. The Javon Kinlaw signing, everybody's like, oh, it's too much.
JP.
It's like a third tier D lineman signing. He's making 15 mil. That's like, that doesn't sniff probably the top 15. Also, I went back and watched him last year. That Jets team was awful. He was pretty damn good, dude.
Yeah, I think with Kinlaw, that's like, I'm glad you brought that up. I like the contract value is something that I've been talking about for a while because I think it's true. I think people hear the money. Oh, my gosh, there's so much money. But, like, look at the direction the position's going, man. Like, people right. are getting paid a ton of money at the spot. So, yes, I agree with that analysis for sure. And I think when you watch him last year, especially when you watch how the season went, watch game one and then watch the last game of the year, like, he's a different player, man. He is an ascending player. He's an ascending asset. And I think when you look at his high stuff and see what he's capable of being in conjunction with how he improved over the course of the year, say, man, this guy could be a heck of an addition at a very kind of a positive price point for the team. So, again, like, you watch him, like, I remember watching him the first day of OTAs being like, that is the biggest, like, biggest human I've ever seen.
Massive.
I've seen some big humans,
yeah.
man. And if you get him going in the right direction, don't have him two gap, let him play the three technique, let him play a loose kind of 4-5, and let him just get after it, run straight, and cause havoc. Like, I think you could have a really valuable piece for this defense. And again, we talk about guys that can be home run swings, and there's not a lot of them. We've talked about the high floor of Dietrich Wise, the high floor of Eddie Goldman, if he ends up making the team. But I think Javon Kinlaw, to me, is a ceiling type of play, man. Like, his physicality, the way that he can just burst and put his hands on people and create knockback. Like, I think about him with Daryl Tapp and Ryan Kerrigan and the coaching he's going to get and the way that Dan Quinn knows how to maximize defensive linemen. And I think that is a ball of clay that has such a high ceiling. And if you can just scratch the surface, scratch that ceiling even a little bit, man, that's going to be a really, really nice addition for this defense.
Also, pass rush from the inside is vital also to affect a lot of quarterbacks, and he can probably provide that as well.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, when you watch the splash plays, man, you see quick wins. And quick wins are really hard to come by on the interior. And you think about good pass rushers like your Aaron Donalds, your Chris Joneses, and I'm not putting him in the same category, but they have the ability to win quickly. And he has at least shown the ability to get that done. Now, the consistency of it's not there, but if you can draw out a little bit more consistency from him, put him with Deron Payne. Jerzon Newton showed flashes at the end of last year. Like, you got three dudes that I think could be interesting in terms of complementary pieces, winning on the interior and creating some of those quick pressures. And that's an exciting proposition to me going into the season.
For sure. Talking with our friend Logan Paulson, the Take Command podcast, all the content on the Commander's social and YouTube pages. Does a great job. Played for the Burgundy and Gold for a number of seasons. I want to switch sides of the ball here, LP. Offensively, I think kind of the biggest questions are on the line, specifically the right guard, right tackle position. I think Connerly's immediately your right tackle starter. Maybe, you know, knowing DQ and how they operate, maybe like the first time we see the first team offense out there, it's Trent Scott or something. But I think that's Connerly's spot. I think right guard is an interesting battle because Cosme's probably not back till Halloween or so. Mm-hmm. How do you see that O-line? Do you agree with me on the right side?
Yeah, I mean, I think they probably make Connerly earn it a little bit. Like you said, I think that's kind of been their MO. I think it's smart. It takes a little bit of pressure off the player. Kind of says, hey, man, you got to work for it, earn it. You got to show us that you're going to be a pro about this opportunity. But I ultimately think he's probably your week one starter. And then I think that gives you a lot of flexibility because, you know, Andrew Wiley, who I think is a good football player, not a great football player, a good football player, I think is probably more suited to guard anyway. So the idea of him and his experience being able to come in and play right guard, or Nick Allegretti being able to come in and play right guard in Sam Cosmi's absence, is really encouraging to me because I look at this group and I say, you got Laremy Tunsil, Brandon Coleman, Tyler Biotis, everyone seems to forget about him. And then you've got two guys who basically started every game last year that have the ability to play guard that are available to fill that position next to a rookie. So just, you couldn't have planned it out better. Like, getting that experience while Cosmi's away next to Josh Connerly Jr. seems like the right thing. And again, like, that's what these offseason moves, bringing in Laremy Tunsil, drafting Josh Connerly does, is it just lets you get so much deeper, so much more quickly. And I think when you look at one of the shortcomings of the team last year was like the lack of depth on the offensive line. So they've gone out, they solved that problem, and they're reaping the reward of that now by having good football players available to fill in and play high level ball, kind of at a moment's notice, which is great. So,
and the tight ends also helping the run game out. Bates, we know, can block. What other guys you feel can help out in that?
I mean, be missed, man. You got to give that guy some more love. Bates can block, man. He might be the best blocking tight end in the NFL.
That's what I said. Bates, I know he can block.
Yeah, I know. But
I want to know the rest of the guys.
Yeah, so Bates, I think, is going to be excellent. I think Zach Ertz, people don't understand how well he played last year at the position. Like, his ability in third down red zone situations to convert, to score touchdowns, to be that safety blanket for Daniels last year was really tremendous. And so if we can get even like a fraction of that production this year, like that's one of the better tight end duos in the NFL. And I know Zach Ertz is getting long in the tooth, man, but he just put on a masterclass last year of creating separation, creating space, using route stems, route indicators, little indicators at the top of his route, speed cuts in the right moment, like really did a great job. So I think those two guys are your guys. And then you kind of look at Ben Sinnott and can he take the next step. Athletically, he's got it. He's got everything you want as an athlete. He's physical in the run game. I think he just needs to kind of detail his work a little bit. And it's not because I don't think he's a good football player. It's like John Bates is a pro's pro. Zach Ertz is a borderline Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. Like, learn from those guys, adjust your process, be a competitor, and hopefully it gets the best out of you. Because I think that's ultimately, like, Ben Sinnott is really intriguing. And he's just got to find ways to show Cliff Kingsbury and this offense that he deserves touches over those guys, which is not going to be easy to do because of how well they played last year. And you get the Colston Yankoff, who I think is really interesting for the special teams value. But the next three guys after that, you know, Cajun Lawrence, Tyree Jackson, and Cole Turner are like, when you watch them on the field, they look like a bunch of freaky basketball guys, man. And every year I'm here, I feel like we're talking about the fourth and fifth tight ends and being athletic freaks. And there's an interesting bunch of guys there. You know, Cager's a converted wide receiver. Tyree Jackson, converted quarterback. But, man, he's 6'7", like 270 pounds and can run a little bit. Like, I'm really curious to see how the bottom half of that room shakes out and if one of those guys can make a push for the roster.
You know tight ends are going to go deep on the tight end question, Pete.
all right. Why do you think I asked that question?
LP, let's assume health, right? Let's assume everybody's healthy, which has been a problem for this group, honestly. How do you see the running back committee shaking out?
Yeah, that's probably one of the more interesting, like, training camp battles, to be quite honest. Like, I think, you know, at times you see how special Brian Robinson can be, but also he's kind of banged up, right? Like you said, like, health has been a big issue for that group. Austin Eckler, I thought they couldn't have had a better player to fill that role last year. But again, the concussion issue shows up. Jerry McNichols, I mean, you could set your watch by that guy just in terms of how consistent he played last year and the opportunities he was given. So great find by Adam Peters.
Really good.
Bringing kind of
bro.
A journeyman running back who did a great, absolutely did a great job with that stuff. But I do think the kind of ace in the room or the interesting one is, Bill Merritt. Because, he's a guy that when you watch him from 2 years ago at New Mexico, like, he's got something as a runner, man. He's got the juice. He's got the vision. He's got the contact balance. He's got all these things. And, you know, if he plays football last year, obviously he didn't play because of an eligibility issue. Like, I think he's going much higher than the seventh round. I think he's probably a third, fourth round pick kind of guy. And you see the movement skills, the physicality when he runs, but I think I can't overstate how impressive his vision is. And so getting a true runner like that into this offense, I think, is a really interesting proposition. And a guy who does have some home run kind of ability to his game is also interesting. So I think that definitely kind of shakes up the room. And also you hear the coaches say, hey, I don't see him as a scat back. I see him as an every down back. Like, that's different than the way I would have kind of thought. But then you see him walking around the building, you're like, man, this dude's big. He's well put together. I understand that a little bit more. So it becomes a much more interesting, much more dynamic position battle because now you've got three, four guys that probably deserve to be on the team, but you're probably only going to keep three. I haven't even talked about Chris Rodriguez yet. Right. Like, I love the way he runs. He, in terms of making, you know, like, making bad runs good or making the most out of negative runs, like, he did probably the best of that of anybody last year. And, you know, we're talking about him as, like, the fifth guy. So it's a really compelling room, and I think that's exactly the way Dan wants it. He wants a competitive environment, and they did a good job creating that. And so I'm really curious to see how that all shakes out over the next couple of weeks.
Wiley was kind of the story of camp last year, and we're not even talking about him, you know?
Yeah, all right, exactly.
Last one. We're assuming 17 is out there week one. Commanders, Giants, Northwest Stadium, Terry McLaurin's lined up on the outside. Debo is a unique player. Debo is a hell of a ball player, but he's not a route tree type of dude, right? He's not like a receiver in its truest sense. Who ends up being the number two receiver on this team? Is Noah Brown? Do you have faith in a Luke breakout? Could Jalen Lane emerge? Like, how do you see that receiver depth chart?
Yeah, I mean, I think Noah Brown is a critical cog in this room. I think, like, people maybe sleep on how well he played last year. I don't know. Do you guys talk about him a lot on the show? Like, fans call in? I'm asking you because, like, they should be. Like, they should be talking about him. Like, he was a true two last year. You know, he's 6'4". He's 210. His route tree is excellent. Like, the way he's able to kind of battle through contact, make contested catches. Like, I think he's the real deal number two. Now, with him maybe more than anybody on the entire roster, it's like, can you stay healthy for a whole year? Because while you're tremendously talented, you know, you're a five-star recruit coming out of high school, like, he has yet to have a full healthy season. But I think he is tremendously talented, and hopefully he's around to give a guy like Luke McCaffrey time to kind of develop his route running nuance, to develop some of that stuff. And again, like, in OTAs and minicamp, I think we saw Luke coming along. So, you know, I'm encouraged, but I think Noah Brown is the unsung hero of this receiver group. As you mentioned, Terry, you mentioned what Debo brings from a movement standpoint. Even Lane, I think, is an interesting add in terms of kind of replacing some of that vertical speed that Diami had. But Diami didn't develop into that true two till much later in the season. So Noah Brown is extremely critical. And sure. Hopefully he's healthy, and hopefully he can stay healthy long enough for some of these young guys to find their feet and find some playing time.
Tough-ass receiver, blocker, and really, really good at getting defenders off their feet. We got a break, Logan. I could talk ball with you all damn day. One full segment, football. That was terrific. Thank you, Logan.
Thanks for having
me on, guys.
Appreciate
you, brother. Thank you, man.
All right. Give him a follow at Logan_Paulson82.
All right, welcome back. B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan, as we come to you live from training camp out here at Commander's Park, all brought to you by our good friends over at Paul Henry's Window Installation. And Brandon Coleman was talking to the media, and he was discussing going against guys like Kinlaw and Von Millers and things of that nature, Eddie Goldman. And I think a lot of times as fans and media people, we see a guy being signed, and we always just think about the person as an individual. I can remember playing back in the day, whether it was being here in Washington or even in Philly, where when our defenses were outstanding, I looked forward to practice to go against those guys because that made the games relatively easy. And now as I look at this football team, when I see guys like Javon Kinlaw, Big Goldman over there, Deron Payne, you know, Newton. Then you got Von Miller, a future Hall of Famer. You know, going against those guys has to be a great joy because most athletes don't want to go into practice and waste their time. They're trying to hone in on their craft. And I believe that those things are happening, and these coaches are doing this for a reason. Not only did Coleman discuss going against him and getting that experience, he talked about how he had a little difficulty yesterday in run fits going against a guy like Kinlaw. So after the practice, he started asking Kinlaw about what did he see, what's going on, and the day he was able to approach him differently and had a little success at it. Last year, if you remember, every time you would see Jaden Daniels do something, he had a discussion with one Bobby Wagner. And I've said it many times on the same airwaves where I say guys can not only study the people that they're playing against, they have to study themselves as well. And what I mean about that is you got to find, and if you have some veteran guys who've seen it all, hell, Bobby has probably seen everything. You know, he's a quarterback on defense, so he has to match wits with quarterbacks all the time. He's been doing it 15, 16 years. And I believe that by Jaden talking to him, that enabled him to be better, make quicker adjustments like last year. And I believe the same thing is going to happen when you got a guy like Coleman going against these guys like Kinlaw. And I would tell every offensive lineman on that football team, I don't care if you're a guard, center, tackle, get Von Miller in front of you, put him on the edge and have to block him. because this guy has an unbelievable knack of getting off the ball, and that's going to help you out, which it could do. Like Jaden talks about how he does the virtual reality. When he does virtual reality, he puts it at 1.5, which means it's moving way faster than what the typical thing is going to do. So you go against Von Miller, that's like going against virtual reality. He's quicker off the ball than most everybody out there, even these the young guys. Von's first step is so damn quick that I was just telling him, like Coleman was discussing, JP, going against the veteran guys. And I'm like, I don't care what position you play on the offensive line, have Von Miller go against you. Because the guy is so damn fast, so quick, that it'll be like watching virtual reality.
Totally.
So when you go against the other guys, they're going to be slow. And I just think that we hear coaches talk about older players. We hear a lot of people talking about the age of a person. But there are also people who make sure they utilize the guys who are older, who helps. Good locker room guys, good leaders. Von Miller's that. Javon Kinlaw, obviously, because he's been helping out Coleman already.
Totally. I mean, I went and watched Kinlaw. That's a bad man, B. Now, I think we do have a little stadium news.
Oh?
Just kind of coming down. I think it's what we expected. Chairman Mendelson is briefing the D.C. Council on changes to the deal. And then this sets up a possible first vote on the stadium deal on August 1st, which also allows for the public hearings that are scheduled for the 29th and the 30th.
Okay.
Mendelson says he has negotiated a number of changes to the Commander Stadium deal that would benefit the city to the tune of almost $800 million over 30 years.
Okay.
So they got more cash, right?
Yeah.
That's what they want. We now have a statement from Mark Klaus, president of the Washington Commanders, team president. We are thrilled that the council will vote to hopefully support this project on August 1st. We appreciate their effort to keep us moving toward our goal of opening our new stadium for 2030. We are also grateful for the valuable feedback and support from our fans and community over the last several months. We believe in the transformative power of this project for D.C. and thank Mayor Bowser and for her vision and leadership, as well as Chairman Mendelson and the council for their thoughtfulness and diligence in the collaborating on our plan. Through this process, we've seen firsthand how committed our city's leaders are to building a strong future for the district. With the council's announcement today, the opportunity to bring the team back to its spiritual home and revitalize a critical part of the nation's capital is now one step closer.
True.
That tracks, man.
I like that. That's $26,666,666 per year.
Great.
That like, works.
Throughout my support of getting RFK done, in no way do I want this to be only the Commanders make out well.
No.
You want it to be better for the city. I just happen to think and have thought all along that a major economic development surrounding a stadium at a portion of the city that is, one, underserved, and two, currently just a urban blight. It's just a dead zone. Now, you got the fields, but so much of that space is fenced off. The actual stadium is decaying
before our very eyes.
Yep. And
it's an eyesore.
Yeah. Dude, and you think about Nats Park. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
I'm really glad this seems like a really positive development. And I think all along, July 15th, was great. Let's get this done by July 15th.
Mm-hmm.
It's also an arbitrary number.
Yeah.
If it's July 15th or it becomes August 1st, I don't think that impacts opening day in 2030.
Nah.
Now, if it was July 15th and it becomes December or it becomes next February,
that will affect some.
Then you're talking, right? Yeah. And I think a big part of why they wanted July 15th, they just wanted it ASAP. Because what you find with construction, whether it's at your house or you're building a new shed, there are inevitably complications.
Yep, permits.
Yo, you start digging and there's a rock slide. Well,
Mark talked about yesterday, where the money that the city is giving is there for basically, you know, foundation and things of that nature. He said once they start digging, they don't know if they're gonna find water.
Right.
That's why they refuse to do underground parking. You don't know if you're going to find water down there. You don't know if you're going to find some type of chemicals or some stuff that may be harmful. So you got to go through all this process, and you want to make sure you get out the way. But what I know about this area, permits take for damn ever.
Well, dude, at some point, the council getting this done is obviously the biggest step. But it doesn't mean that there won't be other steps, there won't be other hiccups. Like, there is more stuff to come.
Yeah.
But once you got to get this moving.
Once they decide and vote that they're going to do it and they start to build it, I don't think we care at that moment. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Once you say yes, and then the builders are going to start doing what they're going to do. But, you know, I watched the thing yesterday on Golf Channel. I got home early. And it was about this Cross Creek, I think the name of it, was this old golf course in Philadelphia. I think Charlie Siffert used to play on this golf course. And I think Tiger Woods and also the National Links Trust and all this got involved with trying to do it. They were dealing with the same thing with the city. All right, then you watched all the stuff, and we saw all they showed, like some of the hearings and all this. And these people were like all against it. But they had already realized Tiger Woods about to build this golf thing where you got all of this stuff, kids coming in with computers and all this. When they got to that vote the next day, guess what happened? Everybody went for it.
Right.
Because a lot of the constituents were talking. They were by themselves individually. But this is going to be something great for the city. The city has to pay for it. These other people are paying for it. They're building that golf course.
Right.
Well, they're revitalizing this old golf course. They're going to renovate it, and do all the good stuff to it. This is what I believe is going to happen over here, too.
I think for the people that want to say, oh, you could maybe build something different there, maybe you still get the same economic output, who else is coming in with $3 billion?
But the question is this. Why it hadn't been done in over 30 years,
right.
And the people that gave you the approval to do it, they basically weren't going to give you approval if you're going to do something else.
Right.
So those people that say that understand what you're saying. You know,
I'm with you. Here's what we're going to do. Quick break. We should be hearing from Von Miller soon. Nobody go anywhere. It's B. Mitch and Finley. Now, I'm not sure how much sense this makes, but there's a new idea about a stadium in our area.
Everybody. Sit down for this one, please.
This is from a noted city planner, perhaps, economist, a man that truly could do it all.
Not very bright.
Stephen A. Smith from ESPN has an idea to solve all the stadium woes in the greater DMV area. Here we go, Landini.
I've been an advocate, a strong advocate. I've always wanted a stadium in the state of Maryland that the Ravens and the Washington Commanders could share with a lot of employment emanating from D.C., but still be able to, because, again, you wouldn't have to worry about stuff like this. That's just my personal opinion. That was the idea that I threw out last year, that the Ravens and the Commanders should actually share stadium. You got a minimum of 17 to 18 weeks where you got games there, plus playoff games and all of that stuff, plus events in the offseason. And you know what? And it's the state of Maryland that you have to deal with instead of this kind of nonsense.
But what does that do for D.C.? And does he not know that D.C. and Baltimore do not see eye to eye?
No.
They not cool like that. Sometimes people need to, what they say, when you speak.
Think before you speak?
No, when you speak, people know you're a fool. It's better be thought of a fool than speak and remove all doubt.
Yeah.
That's it. That's exactly what he should take with that one.
I promise you, I have lived in this part of Maryland, and I have a lot of friends in Baltimore. At one point, Baltimore was my second home. Never had we once said, oh, yeah, we need the Ravens and the Commanders to have the same stadium.
But I understand what he's trying to say about Maryland doing everything, but this is the Washington Commanders. And I can see why they want it in the city. And I know what he's saying about not have to deal with that problem. I believe in all that stuff, but those two teams playing together, no, dude. Okay. Where the hell are you going to put that stadium at?
So geographically,
you think all of these fans here are going to go to Baltimore? Or are you going, bring it down here somewhere? You think the Baltimore fans want to come here?
Geographically, the midpoint is roughly Laurel, something like that.
Okay, but I don't think either one of these fan bases want to be sharing with the other.
Current Commanders fans, including those that live in Maryland, if you live in Germantown or Poolsville, like a lot of Maryland fans don't like driving to Landover. Newsflash, Landover's inside the Beltway. The current Commander Stadium is probably 3 or 4 miles from the city line. Like, it's not far outside of the city. There would be an absolute riot if they were like, all right, we got a new plan. Laurel, baby. Jessup. We're going to Jessup. Not to mention, the Ravens currently have a dope stadium in downtown Baltimore.
You think they
want to move out?
Steven has been in this area. He must stay in the hotel and not venture out to even make that type of suggestion.
Can we hear it one more time just for the absurdity of it all?
I've been an advocate, a strong advocate. I've always wanted a stadium in the state of Maryland that the Ravens and the Washington Commanders could share with a lot of employment emanating from D.C., but still be able to, because, again, you wouldn't have to worry about stuff like this. That's just my personal opinion. That was the idea that I threw out last year, that the Ravens and the Commanders should actually share stadium. You got a minimum of 17 to 18 weeks where you got games there, plus playoff games and all of that stuff, plus events in the offseason. And you know what? And it's the state of Maryland that you have to deal with instead of this kind of nonsense.
Ask you a question. Who was on that show with him?
That agreed?
I heard Molly. Okay, who else was on there that did not say, dude, you out your damn mind? That will not work.
I don't know, B. I don't really watch that show,
frankly. You know, I'm just saying, it's just, I don't know. That's what you need, people to be able to go against people sometimes. And right then, somebody should have said, nah, dog, those two people don't see it. They don't see eye to eye like that. Those two teams, those two fan bases don't view it like that. You know what I mean? It doesn't fit.
In no way does that fit. When the Niners and the Raiders played across the bay from one another, you know what they never had? A shared stadium.
Yeah.
Even as Candlestick got old, San Fran always had the money. They got a new joint built in Santa Clara.
And the Oakland Raiders had to go to them.
Vegas.
They had to leave and go to another whole state.
Right. And that... it's probably closer proximity, but maybe perhaps more complicated geography. But, like, the Raiders could play in Santa Clara. They said, no, we're going to Vegas. Like, the idea that the Commanders and the Ravens would share a stadium in the geographic midpoint of D.C. and Baltimore is just asinine.
It is. I can understand why L.A. Chargers and Rams are playing. They both are in L.A. now. Okay? New York, you can see that. Because both from New York City. They don't play in New York City, but they both are from New York City. That suggestion he just made is like saying, how about the Giants and the Eagles playing the same stadium?
That's
kind of what it is.
The Dolphins and the Bucks.
Yeah. You know, that's basically what it sounds like. Nah, bro. No, man.
Instead of Miami having a stadium and Tampa having a stadium, let's build one Orlando where everybody plays.
Yeah, yeah. And you could get Mickey and all of them to come be like your halftime show.
It's just so silly.
Like, just like he said.
And to present it like you have like this deep intellectual understanding of the area and that, oh, we're going to get jobs from D.C.
Yeah, like he said that our quarterback, Tressway, you remember? He had them receptions, pass receptions, throwing it to him and all. When he said that, stop talking about this team, dog. If you don't know what the hell you're talking about, stop.
In fairness to Stephen A., though, Tressway does have more passing yards in the NFC Championship game than Dak Prescott, so he probably just got confused.
Big facts. Now, Lamphill, you have been a vocal, I would say, opponent of a new stadium in Virginia and a vocal proponent of a new stadium anywhere besides Virginia. So how do you feel about this Commanders-Ravens joint stadium in Jessup, Maryland?
I mean, that's just remarkably stupid. I like in the clip, too, where he talks about, you know, I've been an advocate of this. Like, he's just been talking about it for years, and it's not something he just came up with 4 minutes ago.
That came off the top of his head.
Yeah.
Because the fact that he said it lets you know he knows absolutely nothing about this area.
Not a chance.
I don't think we're going to get comment, but part of me almost wants to reach out to Governor Moore and just be like, hey, Gov.
Hey, Gov, hit us on our phones. You know the numbers. And let us know what you think about that.
Stephen A. has proposed a joint stadium in Laurel.
Nobody wants that.
He didn't even say Laurel. He just said they going to play somewhere.
Could be right next to the Eastern Motors.
You think these people about to get rid of M&T Bank?
No. They have a dope downtown stadium.
Hell yeah.
That's what everybody wants.
And so in other words,
I believe the state just committed a bunch of money to.
If you had to do that, you would have to uproot everything here to go play there because they're not getting rid of their stadium.
You imagine if the Burgundy and Gold played in downtown Baltimore for home games?
No. I'm not even trying to imagine that.
I mean, it's just so cataclysmically dumb. But whatever. It's kind of funny. I mean,
God.
The best I can do with that, Stephen A. undeniably is good at being provocative. That to me isn't even provocative. It's just silly.
That's pretty stupid.
I'm
trying to make a word up.
This reminds me of the time Stephen A. Smith talked about what a big impact Hunter Henry was going to have for the Chargers in the game that was taking place that evening, even though Hunter Henry had torn his ACL earlier in the season.
Never know, though. It may be impacting the locker room later.
Yeah,
in the pregame speech.
Yeah. Nah, bro. Nah.
Stop.
Please stop discussing this franchise.
B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. I'm not going to waste any time. I want to get to the Rude guest hotline. Rude makes the most reliable HVAC products in the DMV. To talk to our friend Peter Rosenberg. What a day to talk to Peter. I want to start here. Is it your birthday? Happy birthday.
Yesterday was my birthday. Thank you, friend.
Oh, Leo. What's first day of Leo's, right? July 23rd?
I'm a border day, so some people call me Cancer. Some call me Leo.
Nah, take the Leo. It's much cooler.
I agree. You know, I prefer it, but I also don't want to be dishonest with myself. I got a little bit of Cancer in there, too.
Okay.
All right. So, Peter, we're out of Commanders training camp, and obviously Jaden Daniels, Terry McLaurin, there's a million stories, but the way news works is it doesn't care where you are, what you think the story is that day. News just happens. And you are, like, uniquely positioned to talk about Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan, yeah.
I mean, you made a career doing it. You do a lot of different things, but you are heavily involved in WWE. You call main events. I imagine Hulk Hogan has had some major impact on your life from when we were kids, and he was one of the best, and then everything that's kind of happened since then.
You would be correct, sir. That's what I've sort of been left thinking about is, you know, obviously on a big level, the wrestling business is just completely different because Hulk Hogan existed. And yeah, I don't know. Do I fall in love with it the way that I do without Hulk Hogan? I mean, I was 8 years old in 1987. WrestleMania 3 was a huge, huge deal. My second grade teacher, she was an assistant, actually, teacher, taped it for me, Miss Clemens. And wow. Gave me the VHS of WrestleMania 3 because, you know, my parents weren't paying for the pay-per-view. And, without that Hogan-Andre story, I just don't know that I'm sitting here with my life just kind of so mixed up in this crazy world. So, yeah, super, super impacted by it. And, you know, obviously when people have a controversial ending, it makes it complicated. The feelings are complicated, but the overwhelming feeling is sadness for sure.
But I think anytime you meet a person, it comes down to those personal times you talk to them or relationships, whatever you had. Did you have a personal relationship and have a chance to talk to them and develop one?
I would never go as far as saying we had a personal relationship. I would say that I certainly interviewed him a handful of times, mm-hmm. and had moments of seeing him and chatting with him on multiple occasions. Never had anything but lovely interactions with him. So, yeah. You know, my complicated feelings for him are colored by the other things that went on. You know, when I saw him, here's the thing about Hulk Hogan. He's going to be Hulk Hogan. I mean, there was one time I remember bumping into him in the WrestleMania hotel, maybe when I first started working for the company, maybe 2017, something like that. And I don't think that he recognized me from the previous times I'd interviewed him and stuff like that. I don't think so, at least at that point. And we started chatting, and within like a minute, he starts going into these Hulk Hoganisms. That, like, you know, talking to me about Andre the Giant, like, see, it was, like, hilarious, because I'm like, wait, do you not know that I know all of this, and I've heard you tell it 1,000 times? Like, it was like he was playing his greatest hits, and you're like, uh-huh. But this is just there was no one around, guys. It was, it was in the hallway on, like, one of the floors where there's conference rooms. You know, because that's where, like, they'll set up to have, like, our green rooms and stuff. And no one was there. And like, I'm like, wow, he's really just going into Hulk Hogan mode. And I thought it was very funny and interesting. But also, it is sort of one of the things that people are critical about when it comes to Hulk Hogan, was that he was always sort of working, always giving you the character. And then when that unfortunate video came out all those years later, when you got to see what appeared to be the real him, it wasn't a very good look.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I got to meet him on the sideline in Tampa once, and he couldn't have been nicer and cooler. But obviously, you know, whatever else was going on there is awful, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it's one of these weird things to try to dissect or put it all together now, especially now that he's passed. I didn't even know he was sick,
apparently. We live in this world now where, like, we just aren't allowed to have complex feelings. You know, mm-hmm. we have decided that everybody has to, you know, I was just talking about it earlier this week because of the tragic death of Malcolm Jamal Warner. Yeah. And, you know, Malcolm Jamal Warner was steadfast in his love for Bill Cosby. And he did not deny Bill Cosby's wrongdoings or legitimize them or even say, oh, no, no, I know that he's innocent. He didn't do that. But what he also didn't do was not love him anymore, you know, because the man gave him his entire life.
Hell yeah.
And you know, there was controversy last year because in an article in the New York Times, in an interview, John Cena, who was just returning at the time, basically said, I'll always love Vince McMahon. And a lot of people got angry about that. And I'm like, wait, John Cena is rich, famous, happy, successful, all because he met Vince McMahon. And you expect him to publicly say he hates him? You can be disappointed in things people say or do, but that doesn't mean you have to throw them away. And Hulk Hogan, the kind of things that he said are the things that basically offend me most in the world, right? Like, there's basically nothing that will upset me or offend me more than the kind of things that he was caught on tape saying. But I still try not to define every human being by the absolute worst moment anybody knows about. The fact of the matter is, he also absolutely changed the business, and I don't think I would be having the fun I'm having, and a lot of people would have livelihoods, and would be doing very well without the things that he contributed. I think all those things can be true.
I think it gets to a point where people can't tell you what experience you had with somebody. And you have to be true to yourself on that. And as John Thompson always said, don't let people judge you by sound clips of your life. You know, there have been a lot of people who made mistakes. And you're absolutely right. This society wants to only judge you off of that one moment when you made a mistake, not the other 99% of the things you did that were not bad. And I think it's BS. Point blank.
Yeah, it's lazy. And it's not based in integrity. It's based in us all being fear of you know, being fearful of being judged. And, you know, listen, I am someone who believes that people should have to live up to the things that they've said and done, but I think all of us have a right to have complex feelings. The biggest disappointment for me about Hogan's passing is, A, 71 is just too young. I don't care what mileage you put on your body. In 2025, to die at 71 is a tragedy. You know, these days, people, especially people with means, you would think Hulk Hogan would have been able to go a lot longer. But unfortunately, that was not the case. And the other thing is just the fact that he was never able to make amends. I mean, the last time the guy was on TV, guys, he was utterly booed out of the building. And mostly, oh, yeah, it was the Netflix premiere of Raw. And they brought him out, and he was just obliterated. It was in L.A., and it was not the crowd that was going to be easily forgiving, and they were not. And listen, Hulk kind of played it off afterwards, and, oh, you know, but everyone's talking about me. But the bottom line is it was not a spot where he was supposed to be booed. And frankly, you know, he kind of got himself in that position. And mm-hmm. I wish he had done more to get out of it. But he didn't, you know, and that is sad, because I think everything will kind of have an asterisk. But the bottom line is, if you want to talk about the wrestling part of it, guys, nobody's bigger. He, like, in my life right now, if I bump into someone and they don't know what I do, and I say, oh, and I moonlight, I work in pro wrestling, they will literally say, like, oh, like Hulk Hogan? I mean, he is Babe Ruth. He is the word Kleenex. You know what I mean? That is wrestling right there, no matter how you feel about it.
Yeah. I know your time is tight, and I appreciate you making time for us on what is going to be a really busy day for you. I did want to give you a chance just to weigh in on – I'm sure you're seeing the videos and everything going on down here. There's so much excitement. I mean, Von Miller talked today, and it was incredible. If you haven't heard his story, why he chose number 24, I think you're going to love it. But there is also the Terry cloud kind of hanging here. How you feeling about – first couple of days of Commander's training camp?
The Terry cloud's getting a little gray over there, JP. I'm not feeling it. I really sort of thought this was going to be a simple thing, and we were playing like a little bit of a game, and eventually we would just land where we needed to land. It now, having gone this far, is starting to freak me out just a tad.
I think
give yourself a couple more weeks, Peter. I'm gonna help you out.
All right.
Just another week. We're gonna have.
Well, who's gonna budge though? In the end, is my question. Where do we get the solution?
That's a great question. That's a great question, and I think I don't know the answer. I wonder. I think both sides will have reasons to budge. One, listen, man, does Terry play this thing the whole way? Would he ever really miss training camp? Would he ever really miss games? I don't believe that to be the case. At the same time, I think as Washington watches this receiving core, Debo is a unique weapon, and he's looked great out here. But, like, we're trying to talk ourselves into a guy like Chris Moore, who's bounced around. I thought Ja'Cory Brooks had a good practice today, but, like, at some point, they're going to look around and be like, okay, what do we do for the vertical element in our passing game?
I watched it today, and you can see something missing.
Right.
I'm being honest with it. I watched it, and you go, something is missing, and we know what that something is.
Right. So, you know what I mean? Like, I think there's a lot to kind of consider, but I think both – the thing I keep going back to is this deal makes too much sense for both sides. And because of that, I think it's like, husband and wife are fighting, like, whatever's going on, eventually you kind of settle it down and get back to where you need to be, figure it out, move forward. I don't know when that time comes, but that is what I think and hope will happen.
From your mouth to God's ear, and I hope, you know, I've said this to you guys a few times, I think it is complicated. I think the Terry thing is more complex than people would believe, because he is more valuable to the Commanders than he is elsewhere. And at the same time, the Commanders need him more than others. They both need each other a lot. Like, Terry on the free market is not as valuable as he is here. But at the same time, The Commanders minus Terry next year is a different proposition that they cannot afford, guys, because we are in fully – this is the first time we can say this in 20-some years. We are in full-on go-for-it mode. So they need him. This next year, the goal is make it to the Super Bowl. And that conversation isn't happening, I don't think, without Terry McLaurin.
Well, what you just said makes Lewis Riddick said even more. Put an exclamation point on what he said even more, because he said that it's about Jaden continuing his growth, and by not having Terry around, you kind of stunt that a little bit. And when you made the comment you just made, it hit me more of what he said. So I'm with you on that.
Well, and do you guys remember? We talked about this too, but if y'all remember. Week 1 and 2, like before Terry busted out against Cincinnati, Jaden was showing promise, but he wasn't Jaden Daniels yet. He became Jaden Daniels when Terry started catching the football. That is like when it changed, and he went from like, ooh, okay, I see some stuff here, to like, oh my God, that was directly connected to number 17. So they're going to have to figure that out. And by the same token, it's like, Terry, if I'm the Commanders, my logic with him is, hey, listen, man, you've been here a long time. You went through a lot of crap. We're going to pay you for that. We're going to find a way to show you appreciation. At the same time, you went through way too much crap to not be a part of what we're about to do. And we need to be able to continue to do that and spend money smartly. So can we come to a point where we are giving you the smartest, most respectful money, but where you're not making us play ourselves, and where will you love this team enough to understand that we get why you might feel like you're worth a couple million more, but in order to keep doing what we're doing, this is the amount we're going to give you. Can they come to that agreement? And I think, to JP's point, I think eventually they'll end there.
Yeah. Peter, you got to go. We got to go. We appreciate
you, brother.
Man.
You're the best. Talk soon, guys.
All right, man.
Thank you, man. That's our boy Peter Rosenberg, unique perspective on Hulkster and the Skins. Not a lot of people can do that. Give him a follow at Rosenberg Radio. When we come back, we got to make some bets. Before we go, though, you got to hit up Paul Henry. He's got great deals all of July, and the work he did at my house with my windows and my doors has kept my house so cool, so comfortable, even in this intense D.C. summer heat. B, I know he's done a ton of work at your house. Trust me, man. Call Paul Henry. He is the most easygoing, chill dude that does absolutely tremendous work, and it's like working with his family. His son, Brian, actually did all the work at my house. I love these guys. Call in July, and you get $120 off each window with a 5-window minimum and $500 off each door at Paul Henry's window installation.
Yeah, Paul does doors. He does windows, gutters, roofs, fixed pergolas, and he doesn't try to break the bank. He doesn't try to break the bank. He comes in and he's very fair with you. And that's why I liked him so much. You know, when he came to my house the first time, we sat down and talked. He walked around the whole house. We sat down. And I was thinking about, you know, doing these crazy windows. He was like, nope, you don't need that. Not in this area. He told JP the same thing when he was trying to put the most expensive windows in his sunroom. He made sure he got the ones that he need for the sunroom, and he got the proper windows for his house. Paul is great, man, so reach out to him right now. As JP stated, you can get $120 off each window with the 5-window minimum and $500 off each door. So contact Paul Henry's Window Installation today and tell him B. Mitchell Philly sent you. PaulHenry'sWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice.